I appreciate the invitation. So really, what I'm going to talk about is the representation of a couple of master's students' work. One of them is actually in the audience. So when I get to the stuff she worked on, if you guys have any questions over it that I don't want to answer, I'm just going to turn it over to her. So as Bob alluded to, really talking about a couple different things, but in my mind, they're interrelated. So people such as myself and Bob encourage commercial producers across the U.S. to utilize breed strengths through complementarity and crossbreeding systems. But unfortunately, we haven't always made that extremely easy for you. And one of the things in the latter part of the talk is we have these crossbreed adjustment factors, which are extremely useful tools to be able to compare EPDs of different breeds directly for growth and carcass traits. But some of the economically relevant traits that we have within breed predictions for, we do not have an easy way or really any way at all to directly compare them across breeds. So as a consequence, for some of the things we'd really like you to use in sire selection, we haven't made it easy to do so across different populations. So this is supposed to be effective. When graduate students give these talks, their advisor always goes through it in great detail to avoid those kind of mistakes. And then when you get to my position and you put together these slides, obviously months and months in advance, sometimes those things escape you. But to develop effective breeding systems really requires the exploitation of heterosis and breed complementarity and the selection, or at least contemplating the selection, of candidate sires across several different breeds. So to be able to refine these decisions, we believe a couple of things were worthy of investigation. One of those is more finer detail than the global estimates of heterosis that we have. So looking at least at differences between biological types, and even more finer than that, looking at breed-specific estimates of heterosis. And then also getting at some of those crossbreed EPD adjustments for traits where that currently isn't available, and the one that we started to tackle first was Cavendish direct and Cavendish maternal, because unfortunately right now in our crossbreed EPD adjustments, we have those for birth weight, but birth weight's an indicator trait. It's not an economically relevant trait. Calving ease is the economically relevant trait, so we'd really like to be able to develop adjustment factors to tackle that. So the objectives: to estimate breed-specific heterosis among the seven largest beef breeds in the U.S., the taurine breeds, and then develop a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors, or at least a beta version of that, for calving ease direct and calving ease maternal. So to start with the heterosis bit, when you give this kind of talk to a lay audience, it's nice to, sometimes fun to ask them to pick out which one's the Angus, right? Some of it's intuitive which ones aren't. Other ones, it's a bit more opaque. But we want to evaluate breed-specific heterosis for the growth traits, birth, weaning, and yearling, using the seven most commonly used beef breeds in the U.S., and then also the composite Mark III. So there's, if some of you were guessing, there's what the breeds are. So the Mark III, for those of you that aren't aware, here's the breed composition of them. They're a quarter Pinsgauer, a quarter Red Poll, a quarter Hereford, and a quarter Angus. So essentially three-quarters British, a quarter Continental. The mating plan, and if I mess this up, there's guys in here that can correct me, but essentially Hereford, Angus, and Mark III dams were mated to one of eight potential sire breeds here: Hereford, Angus, Red Angus, Simmental, Limousine, Gelvie, Charlet, and then Mark IIIs. And then females from this mating were then mated to F1 sires, okay, of these different potential combinations to create what we call F1 squareds. And they're not F2s, because in the F1 squareds, you could actually end up having two different F1s with different breed proportions mated together, so it wouldn't be a true F2 then. So we call those F1 squareds. And so that's the population we used for this breed-specific heterosis. The breed covariates, or assigning breed proportion to these animals, was done by pedigree. And then probabilities of heterozygosity, so basically one minus the sum of the product of the same breed proportion in the sire and the dam. Basically, that's how we use to get breed heterozygosity. And Mark III's, the composites were assigned to biological type, either British or continental, proportional to what was included in them. And I mentioned they're three-quarter British, one-quarter continental. These then, heterozygosity within either British or continental was used as fixed covariates in the analysis. And then one step further, we actually assigned breed-by-breed random covariates, and so those actually end up being nested within those fixed effect classes that I just talked about. And for this, when we talk about breed-by-breed heterosis, the Mark III's were considered as their own unique breed. So I mentioned the breed effect covariates, those kind of biological type ones, British by British, British by continental, or continental by continental. Those were considered as fixed effects, and then the breed by breed were random effects nested within that. Other effects in these models included sex, so we actually had steers, heifers, and some bulls. Breed, which was fitted as genetic groups. Maternal heterosis, which was nonspecific, so global maternal heterosis, and then contemporary group, which included birth, birth year and season and location, and then age of dam. And the random effects were direct and maternal additive, genetic, and then permanent environmental. And then, of course, residual. And I just note that overall direct heterosis is really the sum of all the covariates that we included in there. Just quickly to show you the number of animals we had, about 6,800 for birth weight, about 6,400 for weaning weight, and about 6,300 for yearling weight. And one comment I'll make here, and I'll reiterate it later on, is I think there's been at least the thought that these kind of estimates could come from field data, because we do have breed associations that have very large admixed populations. But the problem is the structure of that is such that teasing apart these kinds of differences simply is not possible. And that may not sit well with some people, but the fact is we actually have these composite animals in the same contemporary groups and in field data. I think it would be rare that we would see half-bloods and then each particular purebred represented in the same contemporary group. And so that's why estimating some of this from field data becomes very problematic. The genetic parameters, I'll just show you quickly for birth, weaning, and yearling weight. Here we have the additive heritability, maternal heritability, and the fraction of phenotypic variance due to permanent environmental effects. And by and large, this is what we see in literature estimates. I will say that for birth weight, we seem to get pretty clean estimates from the U.S. Mark data, and so credit to their people for weighing calves in the first 24 hours after birth and using a scale to do so. Heterosis estimates. Heterosis estimates, these are those fixed biological type covariates, British by British, British by continental, and continental by continental. And what you see here, the number of stars represents the significance value. So is it significantly different from zero? And so you can look across and see those estimates. We also tested the contrast. So are the differences between them significantly different from zero? And the contrasts were not significant at the 0.05 level, although there tended to be a significant asymmetry for weaning weight with an advantage towards the British by continental cattle. One thing, if people are taking notes, that's going to stand out here are the estimates of maternal heterosis for these traits, not being significantly different from zero, and I think there's some reasons why that could be. I think there's potentially some confounding issues that exist there, and some of the breed effect classes from a maternal perspective maybe aren't as well represented to be able to parse some of that out. The breed-by-breed random covariates that we fitted actually ended up being very, very small. And so I didn't go through and show you the table of every single one of those, because you're going to look through and try to find the breed-by-breed cross you use all the time and try to decipher what it means. The point is that for birth weight, that breed-by-breed random covariate explained pretty much nil. For weaning and yearling weight explained about 1 or 1.5% of the phenotypic variation. So really we didn't improve the estimates much by including that. But you notice the size of the data we used, fairly sizable. I think what it shows, though, is that continued effort into creating this population to go back later on and try to reestimate and refine those is warranted. And perhaps I'm biased, but I'm not sure where else in the world you'd go to get data to try to do that, other than the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. So the heterosis summary, differences in biological type, heterosis do exist for these three growth traits. So if any of you thought heterosis was gone, it's not. Using estimates of biological type heterosis certainly seem more reasonable, more refined than just using the global heterosis estimates that are sometimes contemplated. Current GPE, or germplasm evaluation project, is growing, and we maybe suffered a little bit from lack of power to estimate the breed-by-breed effects that we were looking for here. And again, I would say trying to parse that out from field data simply isn't sensical. So I'm going to quickly turn to the calving difficulty part of this, and you all know that it has an economic impact, okay? If it causes calf death, loss, or injury, a huge economic impact. USDA, NOS from 2011 estimated the cost of calving difficulty to the industry about $274 million. And it also comes at increased calving interval because as calving difficulty scores increase, we see a decrease 90 days postpartum in terms of conception. Birth weight, as I mentioned before, is not an economically relevant trait. Unless you sell calves by the pound at birth, it's not economically relevant. What is did I have to supply assistance when they were born? That has a true cost associated with it. And so, unfortunately, we don't currently have a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors for calving ease direct and calving ease maternal. And there's good reason, and I'll show that for you. We started with about 31,500 calving difficulty and birth weight records from the germplasm evaluation project at U.S. Merck, and then began to pare that down. So we moved everything greater than first parity because that's where we see the most calving difficulty problems, abnormal presentations, multiple births. You see these years put on here. We removed animals born before 1970 in the spring herd or before 2007 in the fall herd, because outside of those dates, the amount of records was pretty slim. Number of contemporary groups was pretty slim, so that's why we made those edits. So after edits, about 4,500 animals in this analysis. So the U.S. Merck scale for calving difficulty is actually a 1 through 8. 8 was multiple births. We removed that, obviously. So it's different than the BIF scale that you're used to. So BIF scale goes essentially, some of this is actually combined. Here's the frequency or the incidence rate we saw of no difficulty, difficulty score 2, and so on. So as you look at this, there's a couple things that are apparent. One is this is not a normally distributed trait, right? There's nothing normal in the distribution of that. So the dilemma, how do you analyze it? Well, we could just wave our hands at that, say we're going to treat it as if it's continuous anyway. That's probably the simplest thing to do. We could treat it as a threshold character and say we're going to combine scores 2 through 7 and say it's all or none. Okay, they had no difficulty or they had some kind of difficulty. The problem is we lose information. Okay, that's saying that producers actually don't delineate between these additional scores. They lump them all together. And I believe producers know the difference between a cesarean and little difficulty. We could fit multiple thresholds, but we'd actually like something that's not completely cumbersome and that might be implemented, and so that's not feasible either. So what we did was we actually assigned Z-scores, so scores from the standard normal, to replace these observed scores that we see, and that's based on the midpoint incidence from the standard normal. So if we have frequency of 74%, then we go to the standard normal distribution, and we say that now score 1 is equivalent to the Z score at, what would that be, half of 74, right? So 37%. And so actually what we do is we, because of this, here there was just one unit difference between these two. Now we actually make the differences between scores follow what we actually see in terms of incidence rate in the data. So the analysis then, we fit a bivariate linear-linear animal model that fit birth weight and calving difficulty as z-scores. Here's the fixed effects we had in the analysis, and then also the random effects that we had. So the correlations, genetic correlations and heritability. Heritability is on the diagonal, genetic correlations on the off-diagonal. Nothing too surprising here other than maybe some of these genetic correlations between calving difficulty maternal and calving difficulty direct, slightly positive, but it's associated with a fairly large standard error. So that's really not different from zero. We might actually expect something slightly stronger and with the opposite sign. Here's where I really wanted to get to. So people like Larry Keene have probably showed you a slide like this every year for the past several years. But what we want to get to is adjustment factors for a trait like calving difficulty. And so traditionally how this is done is you have breed effect solutions from data at US Merck. The breed average EPD for a base year corrected for sire sampling at US Merck. And then we put these kinds of things on an Angus base and put them in a table that you're given annually at meetings like this at BIF. The problem is, though, for a trait like calving difficulty, the EPDs for breed A versus breed B are inherently apples and oranges. We use completely different models across breed associations to get EPDs for calving ease. I mentioned before all the different ways we could have handled or analyzed this data. Well, you see all those kind of ways plus more represented across the people that run national cattle evaluation for these kinds of traits. So what we did is we took the breed effect solutions that we got from this analysis and we divided it by the additive standard deviation that we got from this analysis, so kind of standardized it. And then we also took, for the breed that we're interested in, their estimated breeding values for the breed average for some year, corrected for sire sampling at US Merck, and then we also standardized that based on the additive genetic standard deviation for that respective breed. Now, there's breed association folks in the room. This little piece right here, so I really needed your additive genetic variance for calving, calving ease direct or calving ease maternal. And those were a bugger to find, really a bugger to find. But you all publish possible change tables on your website, which have standard errors of prediction, and so we could back our way into it. But it would have been a whole lot simpler if we could have sent out half a dozen emails and got half a dozen variance components coming back in. And then we post-multiplied all of that by the additive variance that we got to from the current analysis. So I'm going to breeze over these, and intentionally they're hard to read, okay? And the Angus folks, there's two slides I'm going to take out for you to put online. And the reason is because it's a project we just finished up, and these values at the end, if you try to correct your current EPDs for that, you're going to be wrong because this is not even put on the same scale to be able to do that. But what we see for calving ease direct in general, British breeds tend to have a slight advantage with Angus set as the base here, having an advantage over a lot of them. The other thing I'll point out is just you see some breeds here with blanks for all of this, and that's because either you don't have calving ease direct or calving ease maternal EPDs, or despite our best efforts, we couldn't even find a possible change table to back into the additive variance, right? So you're missing out on those things. So we did this for calving ease direct and then also calving ease maternal. And same thing, if you see blanks, it's because the breed doesn't have a calving ease maternal EPD or we couldn't find estimates of the additive variance for that. Here in general, you see in a lower number would be more desirable that larger growth continental breeds have an advantage as we compare them against each other. And so just to orient you in this table, this is the breed average on an EBV scale, so twice an EPD, breed average for base year 2012. The weighted average of U.S. Merck bulls EBVs that were sampled, the additive genetic standard deviation over here, The breed solution that we got from this analysis using U.S. Mort data contrasted against Angus, and then over here, kind of that adjustment factor. So the problem, as I alluded to earlier, is this whole issue of scaling for Cavanese direct and Cavanese maternal, because the plethora of different models used by people that run NCE for these traits. And so we have to accommodate those differences as we try to come up with the crossbreed adjustment factors for these kinds of traits. So the differences, I mean, some breeds combine Cavanese categories. Some use a threshold model, but where they may center on the underlying scale differs. And my guess, I don't know for sure, most probably center at 0.5 because it's easy. It would be more logical if those were centered based on what the incidence of calving difficulty is in their respective population. But because of the plethora of models used and assumptions, this issue of scaling to get these factors is not straightforward. The other thing that isn't straightforward is the folks at U.S. Mort do a great job of developing or providing very useful table of a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors every year at BIF. The problem is, and I don't think I'm overstepping my bounds, is they give those to you in June after the spring run. You guys go out next spring to buy bulls and use them, and it's the best thing you got, but it'd be nice if it was real time, right? Be nice if it was somewhat in real time. And for some of these kinds of traits, a simple table isn't going to be very conducive to trying to adjust things that are not normally distributed, like Cavanese direct, Cavanese maternal, heifer pregnancy, or stayability. So we need an updated delivery model to be able to do this. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about some efforts going on to actually do this and a bit more in kind of a web-based format. So summary, next steps, heterosis still exists. Use of biological type heterosis and refining breeding systems is warranted, and we need to revisit breed-specific heterosis again in the future as we expand and gain more data to do so. Crossbreed EPDs need to be expanded to include economically but non-normally distributed traits like calving difficulty, heifer pregnancy, stayability, and so on. And once we do so, the delivery mechanism of these crossbreed EPDs is going to have to change. I just think it's too cumbersome to ask you guys to do all of that just being handed a table. So if we could actually do that behind the scenes for you in a web-based format, I think that would aid in the use of it. So acknowledge the two graduate students that worked on this, Lauren Schiermeister, Cashley Alberg. Cashley's in the audience. My colleagues at U.S. Mort, Larry Keene, Warren Snelling, and Mark Thalman, and some of the results of what I talked about are available in these two publications right now. So, Bob, it felt like a long time, but hopefully it wasn't too long. Fantastic. It's that internal clock. So I'd take any questions. I'll be around for the next couple of days. Yeah.